When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What's up, guys? Welcome to The Sesh. Today, I got a special guest, and it's perfect time for the new year because the new year is coming up, and you are a life coach. So first, introduce yourself. Tell everybody what you do.
Yes. Well, thank you. First of all, I'm honored to be here, and thank you for the invite. So I'm going to start off initially. My name is Dr. Rigel Pinon-Sloss. I have a background in rehabilitation counseling, and I feel that I started with rehabilitation counseling, transition onto clinical counseling, and then right now I'm focusing on mindset and life coaching. And I genuinely believe that that's a passion of mine that I would like to venture off, and I want to see where that takes me.
So that's an interesting topic, especially going into 2024. I found that for years and years and years, I was consuming a lot of motivation, specifically from Les Brown.
Okay.
And for 3 years, I sat on the couch just consuming.
Okay.
Consuming. And then I found out that, shit, like, I have to do something.
Yeah.
So that really, like, okay, it's just not about motivation. Motivation simply is not enough. Why is it not enough? Like, what are the steps after that? Because I know what I did, but if I had known that before, like, if somebody had help fast track that, like, it would have helped tremendously. I would have had like 3 extra years.
Well, it's funny that you say that because I feel we're all stuck in that cycle, that especially now with social media, all we're doing is on the hedonic treadmill trying to watch and consume and consume, but that's what it's meant for. So going back to you consuming all of that, I think the main step is, what is it that you take the most out of that content, or what is it that really resonates with you, and making that first step? If it's financial stability, if it comes to emotional intelligence, when it comes to physical health, whatever it is that you're actually seeking, because deep down, oftentimes we're consuming so much because there's a hunger for something. We just haven't asked the question of what are we hungry for?
Yeah.
So oftentimes it comes to answering that question, what am I really seeking, and taking that first step? Because half of the time, motivation will not take us anywhere. It's the discipline that you have to rely on every single day that will take you, even on the hardest days.
Well, the discipline is the hard part.
It's the hard part.
Nobody wants to do that stuff. Why? Like, I know why. Like, so for example, when I started my workout journey, I used to weigh 250 pounds.
Oh, okay.
So I got down to 186, but it took so damn long. It took like at least 6 to 7 months for me just to see any progress.
Okay.
And at that point, I was like, oh, okay, I get it. But 6 to 7 months is a long time.
Yeah, it is. Was there something that kind of clicked that you started seeing, that created a change and you started seeing results?
Oh, well, I turned 40 and I knew that, like, in our area, it's predominantly like there's a lot of obese people. I think we're ranked like the top 10 of like most obese people,
cities,
yeah, in the nation. And I was like, well, I've known that my whole life. I grew up in Dairy Queen, like I was telling you earlier. Mm-hmm. So my dad would, like, feed me, like, dudes and chicken baskets and stuff like that. Because
yeah,
you know, it's normal. Like, that's just what you do here. But then at some point, I was like, COVID came along, and I was drinking every single day. I was
okay,
barbecuing every day. And I just, like, saw my life kind of, like, spiraling. This is while I had 2 kids and a wife.
Okay.
So I was like, all right, I'm good, whatever, fine. I'm living life to its fullest, whatever. Who knows what's going to happen? Like,
yeah.
COVID can come around and just take me, like, right out. So I'm just going to enjoy it. And then I saw, like, more people, like, passing away and dying. I was like, oh, shit, like, this is scary.
Yeah.
So I jumped in, and Mike came in, my trainer at the right time, and he's like, oh, well, I've never trained 40-year-old men. Let's try it out. And then ever since I started lifting weights, like, I just fell in love with it because it's kind of like a release.
Yeah, it is.
Can you kind of touch on that?
Yes. So when it comes to the discipline, kind of touching back to that, I realized that when it comes to that, that's your actual secret weapon, Because oftentimes we know what to do, we just don't want to do it. So there's days that it's very difficult to, when I'm feeling very shitty, very crappy, I don't know, I'm just very off. I know I need to go to bed early. I know I need to not drink. I know I need to eat clean. I know I need to move my body. Even if I'm not motivated, even if it's 30 minutes a day and I've had these conversations with my husband, we know what to do. We just have to do it. So it's kind of like, if you know you're about to make a decision that's not going to edify you, then that's where you rely on the discipline. Is it a yes or a no? So whenever it's a no for me, absolutely, because I'm working towards the goal. And that's where I say you rely back on the discipline of, you know exactly what to do. It's just learning to be disciplined enough to say, you know what, is this going to take me closer to my goal? If the answer is no, then you know your answer and you already know exactly what direction to go towards. And it's really hard, especially right now in the holidays, because I've caught myself very sluggish, sleeping in, and it's just like, what do I do? How do I get back? And we've had these conversations. We know what to do. It's just going through the motions. And that's just it. Once you kind of find that euphoria, or once you find yourself back eating clean, not bloated, getting your hours of sleep, finally finding that, how you mentioned, when you fall in love with loving yourself and your body and moving it, there comes this just discipline. Once you start seeing the changes, you become addicted to it. And yeah, it starts happening. But I think that's in every single area that you decide to dedicate yourself in. It could be within your relationship. It could be with family. It could be with your work ethic. It could be with your finances. Anything it could be is just a matter of really deciding what is good for you and making those choices and doing it anyway, as uncomfortable as it might be.
I almost feel like there's a lot of people that won't make those decisions based off of their circumstances. For example, let me give you an example. Like when I started my journey eating clean, lifting mm-hmm. weights, I stopped drinking. Like my drinking has gone down probably like 99%.
Okay.
And all of my friends, we would hang out. Like every single weekend, we'd get together, my wife, we'd drink, and then we'd do that every single weekend. So when I stopped doing it and they were calling me like at 10, I was like, dude, I'm already asleep. Like I have stuff to do tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like it kind of creates a bridge like between y'all. Like now he's doing this. Oh, he's better than us, whatever. Like I got that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like, no, dude, like I'm going after my goals. So how do people navigate that? Like, especially also when you're like, you're married and I decided like, I'm only going to do this from now going forward.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a selfish thing, but at the same time, it was to be able to see my life get a little bit better.
Yeah.
So
no,
how to navigate that?
I think I love the fact that you touch bases on that, because absolutely everybody finds themselves in that situation of being between the wall and the sword and trying to figure out what's best. I don't want to be guilt-tripped. And I think we live in a culture where we're so, I think with the Mexican culture, we're constantly guilt-tripped into, why don't you come over? Why don't you just have a bite? Why don't you just have a drink? But there's absolutely nothing wrong with loving yourself. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with for you to carve out time for you. Because in order, and I always tell people, in order for you to show up as yourself, you need to take care of that. And if you don't do it, it's not anybody else's responsibility. So it really relies on you carving out the time, not saying if I have the time, it's carving it out, whether it's early in the morning, whether it's later in the evening. And it usually, it starts showing you who belongs in your circle. And truthfully, it becomes a matter of shedding skins of your, and you can answer this for me. Are you the same person you were a year ago?
No, definitely not.
And you start shedding, and you start shedding. And I think the beauty of life is the fact that we can recreate ourselves as many times as we need to. And oftentimes, that's going to cost you people. That's oftentimes going to cost you people that don't align with where you're trying to get to. And it's often how you mentioned you're not drinking as much, or you weren't drinking as much before because you were surrounded by people that's all they knew how to do. And it's very common that sometimes people get together just to drink, just to do that. But it's also very common to find people who are, I don't know, working on their businesses, creating podcasts, monetizing off of whatever skill sets they do, learning new skill sets, traveling the world, learning new languages. There's so many other things that you could do with people that don't require engaging in activities that are self-destructive. And I mean in an abusive sense, you know, because a drink, there's nothing wrong with it. But once you start doing it on a daily basis, then I'm pretty sure you've had that moment when you realize, I'm engaging in something that I know is not good for me. And once you start choosing better for yourself, other people will try to guilt trip you or try to tell you, hey, you know what? You think you're better. And it's just people shedding off. And it's okay. I think it's a part of life of learning to choose you every single time. And the people that belong in that circle will love every single version of yourselves. And I don't know if you've had friends that have lasted 15 years,
yeah, absolutely.
20 years.
Yeah. And a lot of my friends I've known since probably like junior high.
Okay.
Like, we're still a big group of people, and I'm not saying anything's wrong with the way they live their life, because I'm for everybody. Like, live your life. Like, as long as it doesn't bother me or into my life, like, it doesn't matter. Like, I don't care what you do. But at the same time, I'm like, I know when I shed all my weight, right, and I started gaining some muscle, and I was like, oh, shit, I feel like a man again. I feel great, right? Especially going to your 40s. I was like, I wanted to tell the whole world, like, you got to jump on this. You got to do this. And I started I guess it was like a movement to try to help 100,000 people to, like, lose weight, especially when I heard about the McAllen being one of the most obese cities in the world. And I found that maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you can correct me, that nobody gives a shit.
Okay. I think it depends on the audience that you're talking to, but because also McAllen is not, if you realize, it's not pedestrian friendly. It's not dog friendly either. Like, it's not meant for people to be active, in contrast to Houston, to Austin, to other cities that are way, way bigger. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, people like to be in their comfort zone. Like, if they're in their comfort area, the last thing they want to do is grow. And I have noticed that. That's why I genuinely believe that sometimes when you mention, like, you're drinking, I've had stages of, hey, some days for the holidays, I have been drinking, but then I have months where I'm like, no, I'm just going to have a Topo Chico and that's it. And the friends that love me, they're just, okay, cool. You can carry on with what you're doing, how you say. Let's learn to respect our decisions and we can still hang out. I have several friends that don't drink. I have some that party every single weekend, but we can still hang out and navigate each other in a respectful way, to the point that whenever I'm out, if I can't stay up till 2 a.m., I know someone who's going to come and relieve me and take the rest of the night, you know?
Yeah. Now, you're right, because also, like I started having the occasional drink now, because I was like, oh, shit, I'm coming, like, super lame. So I was like, all right, I got to do something.
Now.
Yeah, I'm boring now. I'm super boring now. I noticed it. I was like, all right, fine. I can live a little, you know? I can have food on the weekend, like, because it's hard, like, when you start making, like, these life adjustments, like, I'm bringing my food now, like, I'm eating super clean. A lot of that's boring. Like, it's just repetitive. But that's really what you need to do to be able to get the results that you need to get.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I found. So, like, going out and, like splurging on a bunch of drinks and food and all that stuff, it's like, it just doesn't do the same thing for me like it used to do.
Yeah.
I guess I could at that. But, like, do you notice those things, like, with other people, like, I guess maybe in your group, because how old are you?
I'm 29. I'm about to turn 30.
So you're young. You're younger demographic.
Yeah.
I would assume that you have different priorities than I do, of course, right? So what do you see, like, in your age group? Like, specifically, like, what are their ambitions? What do they do? What do they see in the future? Like, stuff like that.
So I think one thing that sets me apart is the fact that I'm the only one married out of my friend group, but also I have a married friend group that Albert and I had said, or my husband and I had mentioned. Initially, I was hanging out with a whole bunch of single people, and it was not taking me anywhere. And it was to the point that, yeah, they wanted to party every weekend, but I'm like, I'm not here to seek guys. I have a person at home, like, and I don't want to sabotage that. So it came to literally seeking out healthier relationships, to the point that now we have about a group of maybe 8 couples. And dermatologists, doctors, orthopedic surgeons. And it's really, really cool that because that's something we had prayed for and manifested and said, we really want this, it slowly started connecting the circle from one of my colleagues. She works at the firm that I do. And from there, we started connecting each other. So it was pretty interesting to now, those are the people that I genuinely hang out with. We go to wine night. We go to the movies. We go on trips together. My husband just went to Japan. I just went to Cancun. So we have these other hobbies to do, and we still drink, but not to the point that we get messy, because we have a reputation to uphold. Everybody hears everything if they see you. It's just kind of a different type of decorum, and our priorities are our careers to begin with, our marriages. Right now, nobody in my circle is interested in having children so far, and it's something that we respect, and we think it's a very intimate question. It's like, do you want kids? A lot of the 30-year-olds that I know right now, they are not thinking into that. After COVID, I think it really changed their mind when it came to forming families. And some other people, maybe their careers demands too much of them, to the point that it's like, I want to dedicate that first, and then afterwards I can focus on my family. So that's the main group that I have. The other group of my friends, they're younger. All of them are single, and it's different. I still take part in very important stages of their life, like birthdays, graduations. One of them was their parents' wedding. I do try to participate, but they also know my limitations of, like, hey, when I'm out, I got priorities, and they know not to disrespect that. And they always know when to take care of me. Like, hey, Maka, she's leaving. She's already got to go. And we have my other friends that, hey, they take the baton. You go enjoy it, take a shot for me, do whatever. And I think it's a beautiful thing to not have to be guilt tripped, because that's really not how we maneuver around each other, right? Some of them are finishing their doctorate degrees. Some of them are finishing their master's. Some of them are going to travel abroad. And another one, they're executives at their firm. So it's very interesting to see the group of friends that we have. But I think the priority is respect. It's like not forcing anybody or imposing any beliefs on anybody else. And whenever someone doesn't feel comfortable, it's not pushing them to do something that they don't want to. And I think things flow. Like, yeah. I think it really, really does. And I think it's a beautiful thing to be able to have that flexibility of some days I feel like being here. Some days I feel like being more at home and more married and, like, yeah. I guess more committed to my future of we want to build families at some point. So it's just something that I think it varies depending on who you surround yourself with. And I think something else that we also do, it's very growth-oriented people. Yeah. We don't talk about people. We don't gossip. If there's gossip, we just ignore it or we just don't continue it. So that's one of our rules. I was like, if there's drama or gossip, you know what? We just end it right then and there or we change the topic. So I feel like that's a healthy boundary we've instilled in both groups of our friends that has really made a difference to the point that it's like a huge family. And I'm actually very grateful for that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, because when you gossip, it kind of opens up the door for, like, hearsay. I mean, I found that to be pointless. Like, sometimes Rob and I have conversations. Like, mm-hmm. We'll go deep into conversations, because I feel like a lot of people just don't have conversations, like, ever. Yeah.
Or small talk. I hate small talk. Yeah. I suck at small talk. I can't do it.
Like, if you actually sit and have a conversation, yeah. And you pick, like, a topic. Like, I'll pick a topic with Rob. And we'll dive into it probably for like a good hour, an hour and a half while we're having coffee or something. But I feel like a lot of people don't have conversations.
Yeah.
Do you see that on your end?
Yes. I feel people are very scared to get deep, or I feel people are very scared to be authentic. And that's so hard.
Okay. Because when you say authentic, what does that mean?
The definition that I've seen is you show up as who you really are and you don't try to please people. If it's a no, it's a no. If it's a yes, and we were talking about it, it's like if it's a yes, you show up as who you really are. And if something aligns with you, you're able to speak up. If something doesn't, you're brave enough to say, this is not for me. Thank you very much. And I think it has everything to do with the tonality and how you approach it, because it doesn't require any aggressiveness. But I feel that authenticity is something that we lack a lot. And I feel that in our culture right now, or our community, it's a lot about being accepted, or what are people going to say, or do I look the part, when genuinely nobody really cares.
Yeah.
But I've noticed that people get uncomfortable when you ask them real questions about, like, what do you want? Like, or you have the unpopular opinion and you're kind of like asking more prompting questions to really discover what that person's desiring, what they want. And it's, you see the discomfort and you see that they're hesitant, or maybe someone's in the room that makes them uncomfortable, that they can't openly say what they mean. And I think that's so, so interesting and very common as well. But I feel like that's everyone's journey to discover who they are at the end of the day.
Yeah. We talk about self-awareness. Like, I thought that I knew what self-awareness was, like, for a long time. But then I realized I didn't know shit about it. And then I figured self-awareness. I understood it finally. So kind of explain self-awareness and how somebody can find self-awareness.
Yeah. So self-awareness can begin with, and I think the definition evolves as the culture grows as well. So self-awareness begins with your values. And oftentimes if you ask people, they don't know what their values are. They try to say the most appropriate socially acceptable question or answer, mostly, but self-awareness is knowing what's your priority, what's important to you, how you view the world and what you align with, and also being mindfully aware of what your triggers are, what your behaviors are. Sometimes we have destructive behaviors that we just are too blinded to say. So, for example, I used to drink heavily, and it took my friends to tell me and my husband to tell me, hey, you know what, it's not conducive to your growth. And it got to the point that I said, you know what, I have a reputation. If I want to be a professional, if I want to have all these, if I want to reach all these goals, this is something that I have to let go of. And it took me a long time to kind of understand that, to the point that now I can have a drink or two, but I know my limits, right? And then I surround myself with people that are not constantly pushing me to do something because it brings out a version I no longer am. So that's part of awareness, that it requires people that love you to bring that out and to bring it up in a loving manner, to tell you, hey, you know what, these are your strengths. One of my strengths is I let people be comfortable around me. They just start blurting out secrets they've never told anybody, and it's always happened. It was until possibly 5 years ago that someone told me, hey, you know what, you should start into counseling, into rehab. You're really, really good at that, at relationships. So it becomes being aware of what you're good at and what your strengths are, and also being aware and vulnerable enough to accept where you need to grow.
I would say that most people aren't aware of their actual strengths. Like most people. And it takes like an outside person that has to know that person like pretty well. It's like, no, these are your strengths. Like, I guess kind of touching that, because it's an interesting thing, because I only stumbled upon this like recently.
Okay.
Like I talk to a lot of people that have self-limiting beliefs, right? And I know them like pretty well. And I was like, no, dude, like, do you realize what you can do?
Yeah.
Like, I kind of touch on that because I don't think people really understand, like,
yeah,
what, okay, for example, let me jump into this. Like, I am a God-fearing man, right? Mm-hmm. I believe in God. And I don't get any of these signs or numbers from anything. It's like, this is what you got to do. This is God telling you. I never had that. But I had to come to the point where, like, you know what? I'm going to stick my stake in the ground. It's like, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I know, I always ask if that's wrong. Like, is it wrong? Like, because I never got any outside feedback from anybody. I just know that for me, I got positive feedback from certain things that I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. It's like, if I'm getting positive feedback from that, then I'm going to do more of that. So, guess what I'm asking is, how do you pick your values? Like, how do you have your values? Like, Rio Grande Valley person, right? How do you decide, this is what I want to do, these are the values that I'm going to adopt, and then this is what I'm going to go doing forward?
Yeah. So I think the best question that I always ask when I start with the mindset coaching, I ask a person, what is important to you? What could you not live without? And that's the question. And truthfully, people think it's integrity, it's discipline. No, it could be as easy as family. Mm-hmm. It could be as easy as your job. So for some people, that might be, and it really matters the priority. For me, for example, would be God, number one. Two, it would be my family. Second, it's my job. And I feel like I could lose all of them until the last one standing. And that's the question you have to ask yourself. Sometimes it could be your friends. It could be your children. It could be your wife. It could be your spouse. So it really matters as to what is it that you cannot live without. Mm-hmm. And that when once someone starts asking those discerning questions, that's when someone kind of starts aligning with their values. If you think, what if God were to be out of the picture? How would you feel? What if your family wasn't there? What would happen, right? If you didn't have your job, you know that immediately, as soon as we meet somebody, what's your name? What do you do? It's a huge part of our identity. And sometimes I think the order of those priorities is essential as well, because immediately we think, oh, it's just work, 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 work. But what happens when you prioritize work, but you lose your family over that? So that's when you start asking those real questions. And me with my husband, we have those conversations. What are your values? But because just because we're married doesn't mean our values are the same.
Right.
However, we need to find a compromise when it comes to building a family, when it comes to walking together towards the goal of, is it the business? Is it the family? Is it God? Is it, what is it, right? Or even when it's both different families. So being able to ask what's important to you, and truthfully, when do you feel most alive? Mm-hmm. That's another thing. It's a passion. Is it when you are close to your loved ones? Is it when you're exercising? It could be your own physical health. It could be your self-care, something that's a value for you. And whenever you ask a person, one thing that I do is I always give kind of like options, because oftentimes people can't find the words to what they're feeling or what it is that they might identify with. So I just give kind of like, is it self-care?
Give me an example.
Okay. So for example, let's start. If I start with a client, like, hey, somebody who was going, their spouse had passed, right? And they needed some meaning in their life, and they needed to refine themselves and kind of like find the way back to themselves. So that was an exercise that we did. And we started with values. It's like, what are your values? What is important to you? And we began talking about, so what I did is I started putting self-care. Is it exercise? Is it food? Is it travel? Is it your work? Is it your family? The spouse was no longer there, but it could be your extended family, right? So we started creating, initially it was God. That was the main thing for her. Second, it was her job. The third part was her actual extended family. And then after that was travel. So whenever you start delineating that and you start creating clarity for a person, those are the four priorities, and you can carry those four priorities for the rest of your life. You could change them as you keep growing and evolving. So when we started with that, that was something that initially we needed clarity on. And then second, asking where the person was at. Because sometimes whenever you're going through emotions, people don't know what they're feeling. And I don't know if you know this, that we're only as aware of ourselves as our vocabulary allows us to.
I did not know that.
So yeah, so it's kind of, for example, the only words you know is sad and happy. The only thing you're going to know is I'm sad or happy, but it could be resentful. It could be proud. It could be joyful. It could be disappointed. So it's very important to expand your consciousness and expand yourself and kind of like learn more about the world to learn what other emotions are there, right? And then sometimes what we do, it's like with this client, we were talking about, how are you feeling? So we started going over, she gave me the context of the situation, and it was like, my husband passed and it was because of COVID, but we never got the final diagnosis. I never got to say goodbye, right? So we started exploring, are you upset? Are you resentful? Is it frustration? Is it lack of closure? Is it, what is it? So we started creating like a word bank of what it could possibly be until she actually found it. It was a lack of closure that she needed. So whenever you start giving people hints, one, you start asking the right questions of where that could be. It's quite liberating, and then also being able to guide them through what they might not know it is that they need. So it's kind of providing options, not putting words in their mouth, but it's providing options of what could be a possibility. I think that's very healing for a person. And to this point right now, we're at the point that that client is able to get rid of the client's or the spouse's items because she's at a different stage. And I feel like that was very healing for her to find the one, the meaning. Hey, you know what? This is not, I'm not what happened to me. I can move forward. And then understanding that instead of giving people power as to what's going to happen to her husband's items, it's, I've decided to do this, and this is my decision, and this is what I decided to do. Yeah. So we practice a lot of those dialogues. We practice a lot of those dynamics. So I think it's very, very powerful, and it's important to, one, be tactful, ask the right questions, and then also provide possible options of what it could be. And then allow the person to answer their own questions, you know?
What is it about the conversation? Like, for example, like I know a lot of people that would probably like sneer at maybe like the thought of going to a professional to seek help.
Yeah.
Like, what is it about that they won't do that? Is it the pride? Is it, what is that?
I genuinely think it's a stigma. I genuinely think it's a stigma of appearing to be weak or crazy. Or I'm just not okay, and I feel like immediately whenever I present the option of mindset coaching with people, I call it a wellness check-in. And what I do, it's like, hey, every client has this option. Do you want to come in for a wellness check-in? Most of the time, I will know what it's about, but I tell them, we can talk about absolutely anything you want. If there's anything stressful, if it could be related to your health journey, if it's related to your work.
How long does it take for somebody to open up to you?
I think it has a lot to do with exchanging vulnerability. So I always exchange something about myself that I will only tell that person, and then it's their turn because I exchange that information that makes me vulnerable and transparent and makes me authentic towards them, and then I allow them
relatively quick.
Yeah, you can. You really can. Because obviously I feel like, how do I expect this person to open up their hearts or open up themselves to me if I'm just here and I'm not even... they don't even know me, right? So I think that's one of the best tools to use. It's like, let's exchange something and let's create that bond. No, and I always start, whenever you share anything, this stays within the room. And we're only going to talk about whatever you want. It's happened before that we touch subjects that people are not prepared to. And I said, okay, let's put it on the shelf. Mm-hmm. And then maybe 2 weeks later, they're ready to talk about it. They're like, hey, you know what? Remember we talked about it? Okay, I want to talk about that right now. Yeah. So we bring it out. So I use that example of, let's put it on the shelf. Is there something that we've touched basis on that you would like to work on today? Maybe right now you're handling a crisis with your kiddos. Maybe right now you're stressed with your marriage. Maybe right now you lost your job. So it just really, really depends. But I feel that exchange of vulnerability, it's the main way to get someone to feel, okay, you give me something, now I can possibly give you something I can trust you with.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because I used to write on myself like a timeline of my life. So from 40 years old to 93, my grandpa's 93 and he still works out. He's still active. But he's ready to like go. Like he's uh-huh. Like, I'm ready to go, man. Like I've lived my life. So if I am allowed to live as old as my grandfather, which is from 42 to 93, that's not very much time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, shit, I'm behind in life. I need to get ahead. I need to figure this out. And a lot of the things are like, okay, I have a limited amount of time. What am I going to do with this time? I think a lot of people won't look at that and be like, oh, shit, like your time is very small
in this world.
So kind of touching that because I feel like after like from let's just say 42 to like 65, maybe I will be dangerous in society where I'm able to earn and be able to contribute back. But after 65, it's kind of like, all right, it's going downhill. I have very smaller window of being able to do what I'm going to do in this life and have the impact that I want to have in this life, I feel. But I could be wrong. Kind of touch on that, because I feel like a lot of people think they have time, but they really don't.
Yeah. Yeah, I think because people don't want to... I don't know if you've noticed that, and I've caught myself into this. I was reading that we constantly get caught up in distractions, and that's when we disassociate and we start passing the days, and then before you know it, a year is gone. And it's very common that people do that. It could be with social media, it could be with porn, it could be with alcohol, it could be with drugs, it could be with partying all the time. And sometimes life goes by, but because we're so scared of confronting the reality of what it is to take control of our lives, right? So I feel that with you, it really matters as to, one, what is it that you want to accomplish overall, or what is the impact you want to make? Like, because I feel that...
Are you asking me?
Yeah. Like, with you, for example, right now, that would be something, because I have a feeling that it might evolve as you get older, or as you keep, you know, having new accomplishments, that might evolve. Maybe at some point it was 100,000 lives, right? I don't know if that goal has changed or transformed or evolved in a way.
It did, because my original goal is to be able to make as much money as humanly possible from the internet, right? Mm-hmm. But then also I want to give it back and be able to do like philanthropical throughout my rest of my life. So I want to get to a point where I accumulate, and then I start slowly giving it back until I die.
Yeah.
So that's my life's goal, mm-hmm. right? So I'm trying to get to that point where I feel like after 65, I can start doing that.
Yeah. So I think one of the main ideas is that you can start doing that right now.
For sure.
Like, right? And it could start with having a nonprofit. I have a nonprofit called the Visionaries, for people who are blind and visually impaired. And it's people here in the Hispanic culture who either don't have documents and can't get access to canes or mobility or training or a dog. We're able to provide them assistive devices. And at first we think we need all these resources and we need to do that. No, a lot of people are so willing to donate. Second, to give what they have as extra, even if it's additional canes. Even people from Reynosa are so willing to help. And I feel that you don't have to wait for a specific age to do that. I think if you start working on that, one, you find so much fulfillment, because it's that helper's high of, there's this satisfaction that you get from helping another human being in a very genuine way that nothing else can provide, right? So right now you're successful, and it's like, even if you give someone, right now for the holidays, if you give them a bottle of water, they're going to be extensively grateful, especially on a hot day, right? So it doesn't have to be in big amounts. And I think sometimes we have these expectations for ourselves that I need to give $50,000, or I need to give this grand gesture or this big scholarship, when it could start as small as giving someone an extra plate. Like, we had so many leftovers for the holidays. Instead of keeping it to ourselves, I always tell Albert, let's make sure that we save 10 lunchboxes and give it to the homeless that are around here. Because it's like, we get 10 plates, you know, over and over and over again, and we're completely full. But it's like, some people don't ever get to have one. And that alone goes a long way. And I genuinely believe that the more you give, the more life gives you back in very unexpected ways. And that might be with connections. That might be, it's like, you had a dream that you planted somewhere, and before you know it, you're going to meet that person that's going to allow you to open that door. Mm-hmm. I think that not necessarily setting a timeline, and I think the immediacy of thinking that we only get one life. Also, we only get one body. So I commend you on you making that effort of losing that weight, because oftentimes we just want to, if you think about it, our organs have been working our entirety, right? Yeah. So it's like 30 years for me, it's been 40 years for you, right? It's never taken a break.
The only thing that sucks is I get cold a lot now.
Do you?
I get cold.
That's for skinny people. That's a skinny person problem. It really is. I'll just
stop complaining, right?
It really is. So just walk around with a sweater. But it is common. Maybe you never expected, like, you never experienced that before.
Never experienced that.
Okay, so it's a skinny person, like, situation, because I know it's several of my cousins have done that. But I think that really telling people, living in the moment, I think one thing that I have told Albert, it's, I just want to grow old with you. Yeah. Like, I want to do my career. I want to have my kids, but I don't want to miss a thing. And if I feel that if there's something that I want to say to somebody genuinely, I'll say it, because I don't know if I'm going to have that opportunity again, or if there's something in my heart that I want to do, just do it. Yeah. Right. And I think that the intention that you have is very, very powerful. And I think it's a matter of you executing, right? That you say, I want to do this, executing. It could start with 10 people. The visionaries, I think there's, what, 20 of us? And we've made such an impact. And it started just because we started doing it as a family. And then it extended to 20 people. And no, it started from 4 of us to 10 to 20 to now whenever we had a resource fiesta, we had about 450 people wow. attend. And it was with no resource. And it's kind of like, okay, what we're doing is important. We need to do something similar to a nonprofit. And that's how it kind of started, right? So, but I think it's just the intention of where it comes from. And the fact that whenever you're done, once you live your life, you feel, hey, I actually did absolutely everything I wanted to do and not have any regrets of what if, right? So I think that's my main thing, that I don't want to have that what if. But I always tell people I need room for error, because immediately I will mess up. But because I'll do it authentically. And of course, it's never going to be perfect.
It's the human part.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of fun to it and a lot of adventure too.
Yeah. Let's talk about money, the stigma of money. I feel like a lot of people say, I used to say that money's not important. I told my dad that. Like, my dad's a business owner. I mean, he's you're an idiot. So just go to that. Like, money's not important, but I feel like money is the thing that makes in America or the world turn. Like, this is what it does. Like, you have to have some to be able to live in it comfortably.
Yeah.
So kind of touch on that, because I feel like a lot of people like are struggling with finding jobs. A lot of people have lost their jobs. A lot of people are broke. Like, it's a hard thing to see and then witness. And then it's just hard to navigate, like, when you have those conversations, because money is one of those taboo things.
Yeah.
So can you kind of touch on that, like how the money supply works in life?
Yeah. I think in general, it's the perception in which you were brought up around money. Because I was identically like you. I was like, money is not everything and it doesn't make you happy. Now I realize it makes me very comfortable and it's very helpful. And I think it has a lot to do with, one, our relationship directly with money, because we could use it as a tool and it's extremely helpful. Because if you have mentors that can help you exponentially expand your wealth, that could really advance you 10 years from now. So I think right now it's the best moment to, one, develop skills. And I don't think, it's not that people don't have an excuse, but I feel that there's so many skills that you having social media, you can monetize off of that. Even editing videos, even, I don't know, just creating the copyright captions, little skills that you can do. And also being able to rely on artificial intelligence, that's another tool. I feel like right now we have so many things at the tip of our fingers that can help us really just create that wealth. I don't know if you saw that. This generation will create the most millionaires and billionaires. And a huge part of that has everything to do with artificial intelligence and social media. Yeah. Because you see the kids starting TikToks and it just goes viral. And it could be absolutely anything. As long as you're entertaining somebody and it's the right audience, that's the way that you can do it. So I think when it comes to money, it's literally being able to heal that relationship and being able to say, you know what, if you're investing, surround yourself with people that are already in a who are financially stable, truthfully, or who are where you want to be, mm-hmm. right? And once you realize you're the small shark in a big tank, you're going to start leveling up to those people.
So I almost feel like sometimes those people don't have, I guess, the patience to sit with somebody like that. Because if you're looking for a mentor, like I've done it before, I've gotten super lucky. But a lot of people, like, just they don't have time. Mm-hmm. Like they're so involved in what they're trying to do with their business or they're trying to do with their life, that they can't take on somebody. Like,
yeah,
I can't have somebody sit here for an hour just watching me do what I do, asking me questions, because that pushes me back.
Yeah.
So do you kind of see that? How can you use, or how can you get someone to mentor you? Because, like, for example, I talked about yesterday, this guy just walked in. That's exactly how he did it.
Okay.
Like, he got my time and he took it. So that is an option.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I always say, like, if you can't find somebody, like, force your way into their life and figure out how to be a part of their life.
Yeah.
Which is the perfect example. Like, he did exactly what I said.
And you fell into it.
I fell into it. But I feel like sometimes that's kind of what you have to do. Do you have, like, tools that you can, like, how to find a mentor, how to get their time, how to get their attention?
Yes. I generally think it's, one, going to conferences, networking, meeting as many people. And obviously, I think working on yourself to be a people person. Not being an asshole, truthfully, yeah. Like, I feel that sometimes money gives people this presence of superiority, and oftentimes it's being grounded and being able to be welcomed. So One is signing up. If there's something you want to learn, there's a conference. We just went to Coaching Con. It was absolutely fabulous. Loved it. I came out very, very inspired. And we don't know all the many people that are achieving their wildest dreams, making so much money, living such a comfortable life, living in New York. And I'm thinking, I would love to do that. So being able to, and I believe you went to that, right?
Yeah, I was there.
It was absolutely fantastic. I loved it. And just being able to go to conferences and network to people and say, hey, you know what? I have this quick question. If you have that golden ticket of, I have this quick question and being able to answer it and just getting their attention, also consuming all their content, consuming all the information, their books, Alex Hormozi, I love the fact that they're constantly giving, giving, giving value. So being able to put yourself in rooms with very, very powerful people and connecting with others, collaborating, I think that's a huge, powerful tool as well. And then also you being able to exchange. So if you're going to collaborate with someone, make sure that if they give you something, give something in return. Always be thankful, always be mindful, and rather than expecting things all the time, it's like, what can I do for you? And I think a grateful heart always goes a long way, and often whenever someone asks something from you, just don't do it, just go above and beyond, always. Right. So I think it's one, going to all the conferences possible, figure out what it is you want to figure out, put yourself in those rooms, and be a people person. Be willing to go to the mixers, be willing to go to the dinners, to the parties, be yourself, and when you see that, you're going to resonate with someone who has what you don't have yet, but being able to connect. And even if they don't have the time for you, okay, do you have a channel? Do you have content? Do you have a book? Do you have something that I could actually observe? And even with ChatGPT, you could upload all that information of this person. All you need is the name and the content that they have. Upload it. Ask all the questions. And I don't know if you've seen it, that ChatGPT says, pretend that you're Alex Hormozi, gather all his information, please answer this question or create a business plan dedicated to XYZ. And that's how you can even figure it out.
Amazing. It's an amazing tool, huh?
It is. GPTs. It's scary. It's scary good. And I'm thinking it's like we have so many tools and it's just about focusing on what it is that we want to seek, right? Gathering all that information, asking the right questions, and then being guided towards that. I think that it has a lot to do with being open to being wrong. So I think that's a huge part in it. And then being open to being uncomfortable and growing and wanting to do the work. Because I think we're very comfortable. I think the Valley is a very comfortable place. Hence why we don't want to leave it yet. Yeah. But being able to do the work and knowing what direction to do and actually roll up your sleeves and do it.
Let's talk about mentors. I feel like there's not very many mentors out there or heroes or people that you put on a pedestal like they used to be, right?
Yeah.
Do you see that? Because now I've gotten to the point where I seek a lot of mentors and I run into the same thing where they don't have time or they don't have classes that I can buy or to learn it fast. So like you said, I use ChatGPT and I just scrape all their data from their internet, from the website, mm-hmm. and I create a virtual version of them to give me, you know, advice.
To interact.
Stuff like that. Yeah. So I've done that because I find the lack of mentors out there. So I kind of like just build them and then I learn from them. Right. Do you see that too? Is there a lack of mentors, a heroes in life?
I've had a great mentor myself, but it had everything to do with personal injury and the firm that I was doing. And that was the one person that I could genuinely tell you that changed my life a long time ago. Because I was going into engineering at some point, and then I decided to meet this person, and he took me under his wing, and his name is Dr. Marini, and right now he's a professor at the University of Texas, at the University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley. He's the CEO at the firm that I work with, and I feel like it has to be a passion, and I feel that passion has been lost, along with, I don't know if it's right now this generation that we're so hungry that everything that we want for ourselves, that the last thing we want to do is pass it to others. But I do agree with you because after that, I don't think I've encountered anybody else that's so willing to give their time. I think that's the old school way of how people would mentor others. So when it comes to it, I think it's really, truthfully, I'm amazed at how people are able to build their own companies and do that and offer courses. And I'm thinking, which one's the right way? Because I do agree there's that lack. But who knows? Like maybe people are observing you right now. People are wanting to do what you're doing. Maybe you're inspiring a lot of people and then maybe passing that on to others so that you can break that cycle. Yeah. You know, I think it starts there.
The most interesting thing that I found, I realized this past year was like when Facebook was getting rid of like 20,000 employees and LinkedIn did the exact same thing. So you think about that, like that's like 30,000 jobs lost in the past 2 years. And they implemented the AI section of their business.
Yeah.
So all this is now is pretty much managed by AI. But that just goes to show you, like, a small, very small team can create like $100 million business.
Yeah,
like,
isn't scary.
That mind-boggling?
It is quite scary. And that's then you start. Cool. I think I had seen something that I think about 50% of the jobs were gonna eliminate the a bachelor's degree. Wow. For people to be able to work. 50%. Imagine. So it's like you start thinking, what did I go to school for? Mm-hmm. Or it's like, I feel it's changing the industry. I think it's changing the workplace. I think it's changing. How I think it might be an industrial revolution, to the point that initially it was the internet. Everything stems from the internet. I think with assistive intelligence, 30 years from now, absolutely everything's going to run with it. And it's so kind of scary to just watch it all happen, right?
Let's talk about something controversial here.
What?
My buddy and I were talking about autistic kids, right?
Okay.
How they're very... prone to be able to get information. Like it's mm-hmm. information, yeah. information. They can consume it really good. I am good at auditory, so I can hear it, I can look at it, and then I can take it in, right? So we were chatting about how this is the evolution of the next human being.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that we share like 10% DNA with the Neanderthals. So
okay.
we kind of split off and we became human beings.
Okay.
Now I feel like we're splitting off again and becoming this new... super form of intelligence that
yeah.
that is consumed. It started in the 60s with the internet. So what do you think about that?
I think I actually would agree with you, because it's so hard to even keep up. It's so hard to keep up. And mind you, the moment you wake up, it's like information. It's like, where do I focus? I feel like the biggest time management is focus management. It's like, what do I focus on? And I genuinely believe that it's going to change since COVID. I mean, I think that was a huge pivotal part of how the industry, the economy ran, that it's like we had to stay at home. So I think it took a huge jump start when we started remote work. And since then, we haven't gone back. Mind you, all what I do is remote entirely. And I don't want to go back to like an in-person type of job. Why? Because I don't have to. And especially think about it, people traveling and being able to make money and just live their best lives. Maybe 60 years from now, how you were mentioning, that was unheard of.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you're stuck and you're enslaved to a job, or not necessarily. If you love it, that's fine. But you only had so many days to take off, right? And you had to work until you're 65 and retire. But to think about now, these are new people or even younger people that can become millionaires and make so much money traveling the world, having the best time only through the use of their phone.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting to see that. I do agree. It's kind of scary to think about it. But I do feel that it's a matter of adapting. Yeah. I think you just have to adapt and you have to develop skills that are going to help you basically just figure out what you're good at. Develop skills and adapt.
Let's talk about those skills. What do you think are the skills that people need to start consuming now and start working on now for to be aligned for the next 5 years?
I think being technologically savvy, for sure. Learning how to handle an iPhone to begin with. Learning how to use assistive intelligence. I know there's that controversy. Like, mind you, it's like, oh, you're not using your brain. It's like, it's either you use your brain or you don't. And I don't know if you've seen the mission statement and vision of OpenAI, and it's to enhance humanity to its best of its ability. And that means, like, if, for example, we encounter a problem, you use it to help you solve that problem. Instead of you trying to, how you were mentioning, trying to find a mentor that you might never be able to meet in person, that's the whole purpose of it. So it's to bridge that gap. However, the main importance of it, it's maintaining the integrity. Because if you use it for something that's not edifying, then it could be quite destructive. But that's the vision and mission of artificial intelligence. So I think learning how to use it, learning how to maneuver it, and how to implement it into your daily work as an assistant or as even help you run a company. Like you would be able to do that. And also learning how to use a phone. Because I think as long as you do those, you're going to be fine. And I think there's that tension between old way of thinking and not wanting to, or wanting to do things the old way. But what if those old ways take you 50 years when you could fix it in one day?
Yeah.
And I think that's, I understand it's very frustrating. People spend their whole lives and it's like, now a machine's going to come and take my job. I completely get it. But again, it comes to you adapt and you move forward. Because yeah, you want to be a part of that movement.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Because when I got access to it back in January, I started using it for like 2 hours a day, and then it went up to 3 hours a day, and I just got consumed by it. And I started getting those dopamine hits. I've never had a dopamine hit in my life.
Okay.
And I got.
So was it the first time with?
Yeah, I got two dopamine hits from ChatGPT, and I remember vividly when I was there. I was like, oh shit, that's a dopamine hit. Like I figured it out really fast. And then I got it second time, and I never got it again.
Yeah.
But that just shows you, like how fast these things are, because it pumped out, like, stuff that I had learned, like, for instance, 2015 to, like, 2023.
Yeah.
It spit it out in a second, and I was like, fuck.
So am I useless?
Yeah.
Like, you start thinking that.
Well, I did, and to a certain point, because it takes the person that's using the tool.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be able to learn to use the tool in order for you to get out what you need to get out from it.
Yeah.
I don't think people really understand that. Can you kind of touch on that?
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with, for example, with me, my reports. I'm like, sometimes it would take me a day to develop a report, but when now I can upload it to Dropbox, now it has Dropbox AI, summarize this report for me, tell me what it's about in a matter of 5 minutes. That cuts my time by 200%. Like, I don't have to dedicate that time anymore. So now, even if I upload all those documents, I'm thinking, yes, I could absolutely feel useless, or I could use it to my advantage and cut my time in half, make way more money than I used to before, have this assistant and kind of have templates of how to do it. Like, I think you have to, and I think I've done a lot of content research on how to use AI. Mm-hmm. And it comes to, one, who do you want to be? Who do you want to be like? Okay, I am, let's see, Alex Hormozi.
Okay, so let's reframe that right here. So how would you use ChatGPT?
Okay, so how would I use ChatGPT myself in what context?
In your industry.
Okay, in my industry. So since I do personal injury, right? I do personal injuries. So basically, if anybody has a car accident and they can't return back to work, they might lose a leg. Let's be extreme. So now what I have to do is calculate the monetary value of that injury. That's all I do. So what I do is I do a lot of data-driven research. So it's forensics. It's forensic rehabilitation. So what I do is I do a deep dive, 15 years backtrack to what jobs they did they get married, how many kids do they have. So before I meet the person, I know absolutely everything about them. So what I do, I work with defendants and plaintiff lawyers. They submit, sometimes it might be 10,000 documents, right? 10,000 files of documents that I have to revise. And the cool part about forensics, it's I have to be very nosy because I want to know what happened, right? So I have to go through absolutely everything, because if you make a mistake, it's your reputation on the line. So mind you, if you get deposed in court, everything that you write, you cannot write anything on paper you cannot defend. That's the one rule. So if you think about it, with OpenAI, I can just upload all of that and tell them, okay, can you scan this? Can you create a comprehensive summary of educational background, vocational background, which means what kind of jobs they've had, familial backgrounds, medical records. Give me a whole synopsis of it in a 4-page report. And it will do it in a matter of 2 minutes.
It's crazy, huh?
Yeah, when it would take me a week. And also with the headaches, waking up early and all that stress. So I'm thinking it's either and that's where I come back to it, either I adapt or I just kind of get resentful and I just do things the old way, when it could really facilitate absolutely everything that I'm doing and I can take on more cases and make more money. Yeah, so I think that's right. That's a perfect example of how I've learned to use it. But it's been a lot of trial and error, truthfully.
Yeah, for sure. Because you have to figure out how you prompt the ChatGPTs. For example, like I was sitting down with a business owner and he gave me all his financials from over the past years and we inputted everything into ChatGPT. And he wants to submit now a advertising and marketing campaign for the next year. I was like, all right, well, let's figure this out. We imported all that stuff, and now we figured out for the next 12 months, this is exactly what we're going to do for the next year. Like, I don't think people really understand the power that these machines, this AI, is capable of.
Yeah.
Like, it's instantly like, okay, we put all your financials in, it dissected everything, and now we have a plan going forward for the next year.
And if you think about the level of expertise for an economist or for a neuropsychologist, or for example, in your industry, I don't know who are the kind of experts that formulate these kinds of plans or marketing plans.
Albert?
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know if it was.
Yeah, but no, he gave me this Google sheet that was like, it's mind blowing to me. But yeah, he said he came over this. I was like, oh shit, dude.
Oh, he's a nerd. He's a big nerd. He's
awesome.
Yeah, but I was gonna say, if you really think about it, it's like people spend careers and go through to get degrees for an assistive intelligence to be able to just kind of snap it out in a matter of seconds. I'm like, it's scary, but it's also amazing to know that you can do that, right?
Yeah,
that you can
have someone.
Yeah. So it's just like, it's really what you want to do. It's funny that you say that was him. But I feel that at the end of the day, it's kind of like, if you want to create a business, you have everything you want and need in order to move forward.
Yeah.
Now it's a matter of narrowing it down as to what that is. And truthfully, like if they say is that once you love what you do, you won't work. You won't have to work a day in your life. And I think that's the key to absolutely everything. Just like, what is it that we like? We don't have to be enslaved because we don't have to. We live in an era that we don't have to do that, right? And I think that's a blessing, truthfully.
Well, I talk about the global citizen. Like I've noticed now, like in the crypto world, like especially like Bitcoin, going off tangent here, but like Bitcoin now you can store your money off on your actual like a cold store wallet, right? So you can take it off of the exchanges and keep it on an external wallet, and then you can go to any country and change that Bitcoin for their certain specific currency. Like eventually all you'll need is a passport and a few different cryptocurrencies to be able to exchange and then be able to live in any place in the world. Like the decentralization of life is here and we're barely at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So when you say that, what happens if it's a third world country and you can't do that? Are you limited to the countries that allow you to have this?
You're limited to right now. Bitcoin is a global currency, right? Uh-huh. So it's a global store of value. So okay. Anybody can put in their money. It's an $858 billion market cap, which means it's highly liquidable. So if I put in 10 grand right now and it goes up, then I can take it out. Or if it goes down, I can still take out that money and change it for fiat. Or for whatever.
Okay.
Bitcoin works best in third world countries because it's divisible by 8 different decimal points.
Okay.
So it can go down to like pennies and pennies. And so it's able to be able to use as a currency, but also as a store of value that's only going to increase. And I talk about real estate specifically. Like if you go everywhere around here, there's like so much real estate. People are like investing tons. And yeah. I don't know anything about real estate, but Bitcoin is real estate in the digital world. And I was very hesitant about doing that because I, and my business partner, we invested heavily into digital land, and it's worth like $200, $300 right now. So I was
digital
very
hesitant. Land. Does that mean like in the multiverse or
in the metaverse? So the metaverse, what happened 4 years ago, back in 2019, 2020, we invested in an Ethereum based digital land.
Okay.
And what that means is that there's two digital lands that we had to pick from that are decentralized. That means that nobody owns it. You own this plot of land, which is in this, I guess, I forget how many plots of land there were, but you own it, right? And you get to own that land, period. Nobody else gets to own it, whatever. So it's decentralized. You can put whatever you want on that land, advertising, marketing, whatever you want.
Wow.
In the metaverse, right? But I was investing in the wrong digital land because that land became obsolete and nobody cared about it because nobody can jump into the metaverse. Like with Zoom, it's different. You see somebody, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of, if it has that physical part where you have to use a computer, but within the metaverse, you have to jump in there with goggles and you have to experience it in that way. People weren't ready for that.
Yeah, I'm not ready for that right now. I'm like, that's so I guess it's like the metaverse, whatever you entered, you started investing in. So how would you use, what kind of goggles? Like what was the equipment or how would you enter that world?
At that point, there was nothing like it.
Wow.
So you couldn't even, you're claiming your spot at that point. So they sold it like, yeah, you're going to be the first person. We had land next to Snoop Dogg. So Snoop Dogg, where all these investors are coming in, like big name investors. So I was like, I just assumed, you know what?
Let's
get something. And I didn't do my due diligence. And that's what happened. And I started doing that with Bitcoin. And I found that it's a digital equivalent to real estate.
Okay.
So I'd rather invest in Bitcoin versus real estate, because real estate comes with a lot of headaches. Like you have to hire, you have to get tenants, right?
Yeah.
You have to get the yard cleaned. You have to get all these certain things. You have to get the workers to build it. Who knows if the city's going to outzone you and then you lost your land.
All the permits and everything, yeah.
It can depreciate, it can raise, but it's highly liquidable. So like it's they're two different things for different investors, I guess.
Yeah. How did you come across knowing so much about it if it's so new?
Bitcoin's been around since 2008. So it slowly started going up, but I think in 2016 it started getting institutional investors excited about it, because at that point, like the market cap was big enough where they can invest and still be able to take out their money. So that's one of the basic things, like you're going to put your money in here and you have to take out your money at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Most things you can't take out your money in at the equivalent of what you put in, right? Or if it's going to grow. So now in 2023, there's more institutional investing coming in. I think January 10th is the date where 13 ETFs are going to be approved for Bitcoin specifically. So these big institutions, 13 of them, which are world makers, they move the markets, mm-hmm. they're coming into the game of Bitcoin, and they're going to be giving it to like the masses. So now, like the everyday people that have investments like in stocks, like if you are like with JP Morgan or something, okay. like that, right? You invest in this company. Now they're putting that money into certain ETFs, certain stocks. They get to pick them for you, right? This is the exact same thing that's going to happen with Bitcoin. Now the average person has availability to Bitcoin, which wow. usually it's never like that. Like it's regular people buying direct Bitcoin from exchanges or something like that. But now it's going to be offered worldwide. Like in February you'll start seeing advertisements for Bitcoin. Like in the Super Bowl, you'll start seeing that stuff. Like these are the things that are starting to come. And it came from putting ChatGPT. I created a GPT based off of a mentor that I follow on YouTube. That's a huge Bitcoin maximalist. So
what's his name?
Michael Saylor.
Michael Saylor. I'm like mind blown with.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. Because mind you, I've asked, but I've never had someone actually explain what it really is. And I feel like people just confuse me more and more. I was like, okay, I think it's the first time someone's able to break it down, but because you actually have investments.
Well, if you think about it, so I didn't explain it correctly. So mm-hmm. I just touched on it. So Bitcoin is a decentralized network. So nobody owns it. It's run by nodes of the people. So for one, it has most secure network in the world. It's never been hacked. Since 2008, it's never been hacked. So it's one of the most secure. And there's only 21 million Bitcoins that will ever be created. So that means they're scarce.
Yeah.
And I think at this point, there's like 19.5 million that have been circulated. So there's a very small amount that's left that's gonna start coming out over the next 100 years. Mm-hmm. So every time the Bitcoin halving happens, I'm just explaining this because I want to use it as content, right?
Yeah.
Every time the Bitcoin halving happens, it cuts in half. The circulation cuts in half. So the scarcity goes up more.
And that's what I was going to ask you. Does it lose its value at some point or does that fluctuate?
No, it's a very volatile asset. So it can go up 80%. It can go down 80%. It can go up 40%.
Oh gosh, that's
so it's a very risk on.
It's for the brave.
It's for the brave. But at that point, the most that are willing to invest are going to see those returns or lose it all. Mm-hmm. So I'm in that bucket right there. But with the advent of institutional investing, you're going to start seeing a huge inflow of money coming in, which should normalize the price and it'll be less volatile over time. So it's an interesting thing because it's new. It's an opportunity. This is what I feel is like for a lot of people that were behind on figuring out that you're going to get a high paying job or you're going to invest in real estate or you're going to invest in something. This is the opportunity right now to be able to multiply your wealth.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because at this point, it's so new. Nobody really knows about it. There's a lot of people that do, but it's going to start coming to the masses.
Yeah, one of the first people. Yeah.
It's a long-term hold. It's at least 10 years. But if you can acquire as much Bitcoin as possible right now, you're going to make a shitload of money or you're going to lose it all.
I'm actually curious to see what Albert thinks about it. Like, I don't think we've ever touched bases on it, but I'm curious to see what if he would, because I think you guys are very like-minded in that sense.
Well, he had told me a while back that he was looking into some real estate,
uh-huh.
and I sat literally outside. There's $120 million right here. What is it? Where Ambra is?
Yes.
So that whole
plaza, that domain.
Yeah, domain. I know Xavi. I'm supposed to have him on a podcast as well, but he invested $120 million in that whole thing, and I sat out there the other day, and I was just looking at like all the people that need to be in there to make it work.
Yeah, it's like, a lot of businesses.
What happens if somebody like falls and hurts themselves and then
there's a huge lot. Yeah, so, then I'll come in.
Yeah, so yeah. It's interesting to see it that way. Is like the digital real estate or real estate in the real land, like
yeah.
the real world. So I kind of just like deduce. You know what? I don't know anything about real estate. It's gonna take me too long to learn it. The learning curve is gonna be too expensive for me to jump in and then figure it out. So I'm just going to do my due diligence with Bitcoin and figure that out and have some undeniable proof that I'm going to go in this.
Stack undeniable proof.
Yes.
Wow. That's
so what do you think about that? Because when I talk about Bitcoin to people, like I also talked about digital land back in the day. So they thought I was fucking nuts.
Yeah.
So I get it. Like, I get it. You're investing in a digital thing that might be something or it might not.
I think you're very ahead of where we're at. I feel that in the Valley sometimes it's, I mean, and I could tell that you're very cultured in the sense of you try to stay on the edge or the cutting edge of absolutely that's happening. Because if you go to, I don't know, like Houston or California, we just saw a beautiful painting. It was an NFT, gorgeous. And I couldn't understand the concept until I actually saw it, of the value of a digital painting. And I couldn't get it when someone explains it to you until you actually see it. You know what I'm saying? So, and I think it's that trust of, it's the digital world. It's like we're transitioning into that.
Let me talk about those NFTs, because that's an interesting thing. We own a bunch of NFTs that are probably worth like $4 now. We paid thousands of dollars for it. And the reason why I changed my stance on NFTs is because you have to think about like Bitcoin as like an Apple, right?
Company.
And then all the other cryptocurrencies are like Google and stuff like that. So they're technically like stocks, right? And in the market cap, like Bitcoin is the highest, then it's Ethereum, then there's a few more that go down to like, I think like 600 or whatever. So at the top, they're the main apples, the Teslas and stuff like that. Like Bitcoin's most likely not going to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. Based off Ethereum is the next one. That's probably not going to go anywhere. NFTs are based off Ethereum. So what happens is in the Ethereum network, people can make projects. They can make their own tokens and create NFTs.
Yeah.
So there's projects, like say it's my business, your business, right? So we're creating NFTs based off of our token. That's Ethereum based. But if that business owner decides, you know what, a lot of people came in, they bought my NFTs worth billions of dollars, I rug pull them and I take all that money. Okay. That's why I do not invest in NFTs anymore, because I don't trust the human element when it comes to money.
Yeah.
Especially that much money.
Yeah, and I think that's why people are so conservative when it comes to Bitcoin, because it's money, and it's a lot of money. These are like the wealthiest people that are investing that have extra money to spend and invest. So I feel that's why people just decide not to. One, they don't understand it. Second, they're not going to invest in it, because it's interesting. Mind you, that's why I had just gone to, I'm telling you, Austin, and I had seen an NFT, and I was just taken aback. I'm like, okay, I finally get it. Like, I finally understand what it is. It's actually beautiful. Great. Like if I could own it, I would definitely love to have it in my house. I didn't understand the concept of me investing in one and what happens if it doesn't go well. Like for example, your experience. Yeah. How was that experience for you? Like
it sucked.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure you never expected for it to go that way.
I think looking back now, there was like writings on the walls. Like this is like too much, because the market never goes up forever.
Okay.
Like, eventually it's going to crash.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of be prepared for that. And the NFT space was like making so much billions and billions of dollars. And then one of the things was like when Justin Bieber started owning like NFTs, like all these famous celebrities like started owning these massive NFTs. That was a signal where it's overpriced, it's overbought.
Yeah.
Like, because it's too big.
Yeah.
At that point. And then if you think about like the market cap of Bitcoin and Ethereum right under it, like that should have gone up to Bitcoin, because that's like the only property that's decentralized. Nobody owns it. So you can't rely on one person mm-hmm. to like rug pull you. So that's why I've changed my stance on just going into Bitcoin, because I mean, it seems like a safer bet.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think when money's involved, that's what everyone wants overall. But actually it's the first time that I can actually understand it, and the first time I had heard about a digital land. But I get it when it comes to real estate. It's like that's safer than having to deal with all of that commotion. It's like you don't want to complicate it, you know?
Yeah, complications.
Yeah.
Because everything in life is complicated.
Yes, it is. I was like, we don't need any more.
So before we finish out the podcast, let's kind of touch on the limiting beliefs, because I feel like going into 2024, a lot of people are going to be doing the same thing over and over and expecting like different results. And mm-hmm. that really just doesn't happen. So what are like the most limiting beliefs that you hear often?
Yes. So the most limiting beliefs that I hear, say, I'm not good at this, I can't do it, or even having those words in your vocabulary, thinking that, having that fear. So I feel that people think, it's like, I'm not smart to do this, or even to have the job of their dreams, to find the person that they love, to have their ideal body, ideal body might look like just healthy. Or not using medication, right? Not drinking too much. It can be as something as simple as that. So some of the main limitations that I hear people say, it's one, they're not worthy of love to begin with, that they don't believe they can reach it. So why even try? And I think it's like you have the intention, but if you never take the first step, of course you're never going to get anywhere. So I think when it comes to the new year, it's a matter of not necessarily putting not a deadline, but like a limit to it, saying, oh, by the end of January, no. I think it should be, how I mentioned before, it's like, what will I no longer take with me into this new year? It could be self-criticizing. It could be gossiping. It could be partying every weekend, overspending, going to retail therapy every 2 weeks. It could be anything, or overinvesting, overindulging. So it could be similar things that you could decide, hey, I'm no longer taking this with me. What do I want to adapt? Where are the areas that I want to work on? So I feel that sometimes we immediately cut ourselves short by putting these unrealistic expectations of, I want to reach 20, 30 pounds in a matter of 3 months or 4 months, when even if you do it in 6 months, that's still a huge win, yeah. Right? So I feel that being realistic of not having a deadline of when to reach it, but having the intention of what I will no longer carry, that you know doesn't serve you. If it's like staying in, being not keeping your promises to yourselves, not being punctual, not applying to the job, not quitting the job, not saving the money you said, not getting, I need to get a surgery, I'm not getting the surgery done. Those are promises that if you say something, make sure that you follow through, because I think that's where we fail ourselves mostly. It's like,
why,
we say something.
Why do people fail so much?
I think that genuinely from what I've seen, it's the fear of confronting something that you need to do, especially when it's hard. So for my example, it's like I had this surgery. I have an ACL, MCL tear that I haven't done in 10 years that I know I need to do. I'm still spinning and whatnot, but I'm just lazy. I don't want to do this 6 to 8 month recovery, but I do know it's like I'll just get over it. I'll just do it and make sure that after that, I'll take dancing classes. I'll just do trails and I'll be dancing. And it's just different, but I feel it's the fear of doing the hard work because we're so used to being comfortable, right? Because it could be as easy as waking up early. We do not want to wake up early. That's uncomfortable. We do not want to eat clean. We do not want to save money because we were so used to the immediate gratitude or the hedonic treadmill of the next big thing. So I feel it's the fear of getting out of our comfort zone and growing. But I feel it starts with one, it's what will you no longer take with you? Two, it's don't set unrealistic expectations. It's like, it's not a matter of 2-3 months. It's I will just leave that behind. And if you do it, be graceful with yourself and have compassion and say, I messed up today, tomorrow's a new day. Yeah. And you start there.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, they hold that against themselves. Like,
yeah.
It's literally the start of self-destruction.
Yeah, I do agree. And I always say, well, you know what? Today's, and mind you, it's not continuing it, but it's like tomorrow's a new day, you start again. You wake up early, you eat, even if you fail, or even if you had whatever you didn't, even if you didn't apply for the job that you needed, or you didn't quit for the job, you have to practice and mount up the courage, because it takes a lot of courage to make all these decisions. And sometimes we're never taught to move through life in that way, right? Because at the end of the day, that's the scary part, change. Nobody wants to change. Everyone wants to stay the same, but you won't see the growth unless you decide to make those steps. So it's like the realistic expectations of, as long as you move forward and you set the intention of who you want to be and you start every single day, it's a chance to show up for yourself. Yeah. So I think that's very powerful.
Well, let's talk about the last question before we finish out the podcast. So in your accumulated knowledge and your experience, what is the best piece of advice you can give somebody going into 2024?
I genuinely think that the best advice going into 2024 is get to know yourself authentically. Get to know who you are. The good parts, the bad parts, the raw parts, the fun parts, and accepting that. I always tell people sometimes it's look at yourself in the mirror, and sometimes that's not going to be pretty, yeah. Right? But that's you, and that's who you're made. And the best part is that you can keep changing that because you have the power to do that, and you give yourself the power to change it, right? So I feel that getting to know yourself authentically as you are and as you show up, I think it's extremely powerful, and that's how people start stepping into their power and into becoming to what they're really destined for and what their purpose is. Because sometimes people go through their entire lives not knowing who they are, yeah. Or trying to subscribe to what other people told them they should be, right? So I think that that's one of the best things. And it's like, if it's a no and you genuinely feel that it's a no for you, it's not something that aligns with what you believe, stay true to that. Like, don't deny yourself the fact that you deserve better. And if it's a yes, say it with your entire self. So it's like, I think that's very powerful. And I think has a lot to do with allowing yourself to take up space.
I think you're absolutely right, because I had that conversation in the mirror one time. Mm-hmm. And I looked at myself. I was like, fuck, you're a fat piece of shit. You're like I had to be like literally brutally honest.
Yeah.
And that's the only way I was able to move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you have to be transparent. Sometimes it's like, that was shitty. That was mean. That was rude. Or it's like, damn, like I was lazy. And it's true, because you deep down, we always know why we don't do things, right? So really taking a hard look at ourselves, it's where the change starts, because you realize, hey, this is rock bottom. Yeah. Or, hey, you know what? I don't accept this. I deserve better. I should do better. And I think that's where you start taking that power. So I think that's the most important thing overall, that it's not on anybody else. It's on you. And you can continue showing up and doing that and making that change as long as you accept that and become self-aware of what's not serving you.
All right. Awesome, guys. We will see you next time in the sesh. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.